Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century,
join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
Oh, gosh.
You all right, man? I think the very first thing after the countdown got done, the very first thing our listeners heard was, "Oh gosh."
Well, Ben, do you understand?
We're not going to start this over. This is how it's going
to
be.
What it's taking me to be here right now? The amount.
That's kind of calories. That's kind of what it counts.
The muscles that are firing to sit in this chair. I got a brain.
Okay, Matt really does not.
I've blinked three times while I'm speaking so far. Ben.
Are you hangry? Are you hangry? You need to go eat something.
You know what happened? I made myself a tuna salad. I make this tuna salad with salsa and onion and garlic and horseradish and fresh jalapeno pepper. And I mix and I boil some eggs and hard boil them and I put them in there. And it's like this protein punch, like low sugar, like salsa dip that I eat with corn chips. And I'm trying to eat it, and my wife works from home, and I work from home, and I'm shoveling this delicious salsa into my mouth before this podcast, and my wife is like, "We have to talk," and she brings up like three or four different things that we have to talk about, and I'm like trying to listen, but I can't eat and talk to her because I'm like spitting salsa over my laptop, and I did not get to finish my precious, delicious salsa because my wife wanted a husband.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So, I think is what you just said.
I was like, I got to do an intro instead of go back down to my delicious salsa. No, yeah. I tend to like really pack in. I mean, Ben knows this. This is true about him too. I tend to like pack every moment into these little spaces of my day. And then if my wife's like, "Hey, let's talk. What do you think of the color purple?" You know, and then I'm like, I don't get finished with what I was going to do. Yeah. And then, you know, I become a B+ husband instead of the A+ husband I usually am. And it just goes downhill. Anyway, that's maybe what the UGG was about.
C-. We better finish this intro. I don't mean to put
this as a burden on you all, but if we could chop this up, I think that would be great.
Oh, man.
No, so this is a question I want to ask you. This salad, which Deb, I think your wife Deb makes too, right, Ben?
She does, yeah. She likes it. I like it too when she makes it.
Yes. This is my favorite like pre-prepped meal that I keep in the fridge, and I'll eat it like a dozen times for lunch over the next 2 weeks. I know some of you only keep leftovers for like 2 days, but most of this stuff is like fresh ingredients or canned meat. So it's, it'll survive the apocalypse.
Yeah. Okay, at the bottom of this whole show, you have to put the recipe because people are going to want to try it.
Oh, that's true.
Yep.
That's true. It's going to have to go on the show notes.
Email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com if you would like the recipe. It is pretty good. You know, I thought, would wasabi go well in there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it like into a little bit of a Japanese kind of flavor?
That's like the horseradish has a similar flavor profile, right? Yeah, okay. But I was going to ask, do you have a favorite salad lunch type thing like this? If you were going to prep something and put it in your fridge and eat from it multiple times, what would it be?
Taco soup.
Tell me more about that.
In my crock pot, I'll put some chicken breasts in there and some salsa and corn and black beans and taco seasoning and a little bit of like broth. Yeah. And then it cooks all day. And then when it's done, either you can drain it and you can use it as taco meat and make nachos or tacos or burritos like or whatever.
Shredded chicken kind of thing.
Or you can eat it as soup. Nice. And it's so good. And it's good leftover too.
Yeah. So is this, Christy, you're talking about something that you would heat up. Is that?
I would heat it up.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was going to say, I probably would make some kind of a like corn and bean salsa if it was going to be a cold thing. I really like that kind of salsa. But when you said taco soup, I was reminded of this recipe that we make for like a white chicken chili. It's kind of like a taco soup. It's, you know, it's got Mexican kind of flavors to it. But that stuff is so good. Like it's almost better as leftovers. And so I would eat that. Yeah. I would eat that day after day. There's also like a Thai red curry noodle soup that I would eat for lunch every day. If I had it.
It is my lunch hour right now. I'm getting hungry.
Yes. Yes. Well, listener, if you have a dish or a soup or a salad that you make that you want to recommend, I don't know if we're ready to put a gravity cookbook together, but do send us
a couple recipes. Yeah.
Do send us some recipes. I like, because most fast food is unhealthy, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You can only eat like a dozen or two dozen spicy chicken sandwiches from Popeyes a week, and then you just start feeling bad about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a threshold, like 16 or 17 for me. Yeah. So if you want something fast and also like not super expensive, like this fast
and healthy,
inexpensive, that's why I make this salad. But we'd love to hear that from you. You know who else was inexpensive?
And healthy.
I don't know how healthy. Well, it was a healthy conversation.
It was a healthy conversation. He looks healthy. I mean, listener, you're not going to be able to see Andrew.
He's got a nice glow.
He's a runner. He's a runner.
He's a runner. Yeah, I could tell. He just, he looked healthy. He looked good.
He's running the race set before him. Is that what you're saying, Christy?
Yeah. Well, yeah, spiritually.
No, he runs real races, people. Okay, he runs real races. I mean, not that that isn't a real race. Yeah. Ooh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Not that woo-woo spiritual stuff. Whatever.
We're talking about Andrew.
Andrew Arndt. Yeah. Obviously, if you clicked on this episode, you know that we're talking with him about his book, his new book, Streams in the Wasteland, Finding Spiritual Renewal with the Desert Fathers and Mothers. We've had Andrew on the podcast before, and he talked about the Desert Fathers and Mothers and has been doing a lot of reading there. And I love the way that he kind of reclaims their voice for our day. I think it's a valuable, necessary thing. There's a lot of, I think, comparisons culturally.
Yeah.
Stuff that's going on today spiritually and in the church that it has analogs to things that were happening back then that necessitated the work that the Desert Fathers and Mothers did. And so Andrew is a student of them, and I think helpfully recapitulates their work for our day. So we had a good conversation about all of that. So,
yeah. And I gave him his idea for his third book.
Oh, that's right.
You did tell him what to write.
I need to follow up now that I'm saying this. I need to follow up with him.
Follow up with Andrew.
Give him a little outline.
Let him know how to. Just write it for him.
I like this new Christy. I mean, like, listener, Christy was telling us a story offline about this interaction she had with a Christian organization, and she was giving him the what, not, and then some.
She was.
You were giving him the what for and then some more, sister.
I generally tend to come across as just nice, but I'm pretty sure that in this conversation, I came across as
sassy.
Direct. A little sassy.
A little sassy. That's how they would perceive you, probably.
No. Yes, they
but
would.
Yeah, you were very direct. I loved hearing about it.
I loved it too.
Listener, we probably can't share too much about it.
I'm pretty sure that I guess what I'm going to say is this organization probably never going to ask me to come back because I just was like, we need to love like Jesus. And that's, I just kind of was direct.
And they were like, that's not good enough.
Right.
That wasn't good enough. They wanted some other answers about inerrancy and social justice. So anyway, such is our world today. Well, I think that's all we need to announce talk about before we get into this interview. Is that right? Is there anything else we need to talk about?
No, just that you know, Andrew's a good dude.
Andrew is a good dude. He lives in Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to come visit me, Christy. You could visit him.
Wow. To get a twofer.
I know.
Yeah. If you want to go to Colorado, it's lovely. Colorado Springs is absolutely gorgeous.
I'm still waiting for like the first listener to tell me that they're in Colorado Springs because I put it out there many times. Like, I'll take you out to coffee. Not right. once that, has somebody once. Taken me up on that. Well, maybe they think we don't I'm have lying, but I am there. Not. We do have.
I don't know
listeners
why you would lie
here.
About
Come
that.
Come on.
Yeah. You think?
Yes.
All right. Well, if you live in Colorado Springs, hit up Christy, and she'll give you Andrew's number
for his running take you routes. Out to coffee.
It's great. This is exactly what Andrew wanted when he signed up for this interview.
Great.
Yeah. Oh boy.
All right. Well, the book is great. Enjoy this interview with Andrew Arndt on Streams in the Wasteland. Here we go. Hey, everybody. Andrew Arndt is joining us today on the podcast. Andrew is the lead pastor of New Life East, which is one of seven congregations of New Life Church in Colorado Springs, where he also hosts the Essential Church podcast, which is a weekly conversation designed to strengthen the thinking of church and ministry leaders. Prior to New Life's team, he served as lead pastor of Bloom Church, a neo-monastic, charismatic, liturgical, justice-driven network of house churches in Denver. Andrew, welcome back to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
It's good to be back with you guys. Thanks for having me. It's
loads of fun. Andrew, your last book, and we can maybe link this in the show notes, but your last book was all about the Desert Fathers and Mothers and the Monastics, and this book is also making connections to the Desert Fathers and Mothers and the Monastics. What's the deal with you and the Desert Fathers?
It's a great question. I think it's got to be, I'm a kind of a Renaissance man at heart. I'd like old stuff. I think that there's a lot that we just overlook. And I think that when we resource the past, I think it gives us a fresh imagination for the future. Some of that, I think, is a product of having been born and raised in the non-denominational, you know, charismatic Pentecostal world. Okay. Where our historical memory only went back as far as about 1900. And, just starting to, I remember getting to a point in my early 20s where I just went, this is too small. There is more Christianity than this, I think. And Matt and I went to seminary together, Trinity up in Chicago. And something about being in a seminary environment just kind of whet my appetite for there's just more out there. Like God has given all these gifts to his church and I don't want to miss anything that he's given. So if it's real, if it's true, if it's good, if it's beautiful, like let's claim it and let's try to build a life on it.
Yeah, man, that's well said. I think that mirrors my own experience in the charismatic church as well. I remember realizing that it was a little presumptuous of me to assume that the Holy Spirit was present in the early church and then sort of left the church until, you know, about the 1900s.
Azusa Street. Yeah.
Yeah, Azusa Street. And the Holy Spirit was like, I guess I'll come back. These guys are really messing everything up.
Don't call it a comeback.
So anyway. I appreciate that. That's really well said. So this new book, we're talking about your new book today, which is called Streams in the Wasteland, Finding Spiritual Renewal with the Desert Fathers and Mothers. So there it is.
You've got your copy. Right there.
Nice. Uh-huh. Nice. Uh-huh. This we're recording this before it comes out, so that's exciting. I think it by the time this comes out, it will already be released. So listeners, you can get your copies anywhere you buy books. What prompted you to write this book? Like who is it for? And why another book on the Desert Fathers and Mothers?
Well, All Flame was based on a saying of the Desert Fathers, but it wasn't really about them. Per se. All Flame was more, the way that I talked about it was that it was a Trinitarian spiritual theology that focused especially kind of on how times of suffering and difficulty deepen our union with God. So it was really an examination of how our interface with God as the triune God, especially in those difficult seasons, how it forms us. And at the time, I was reading a lot of the Desert Fathers and Mothers, and so they kind of found their way in there. And I was also working through my own difficulty, kind of existential crisis. So All Flame in a lot of ways was a bit autobiographical, although I didn't make it. So me sort of trying to find language to, I'm walking through this thing and like, who is God for me in this? So I was trying to work my way through that and then maybe let that be a gift to others. Streams in the Wasteland, though, I think represents in some ways like the culmination of my really wrestling with the Desert Fathers and Mothers. So the backstory is I was the lead pastor at Bloom Church from 2009 to 2017. And, you know, when we moved there in 2009, I think just out of the, you know, goodness of our hearts or beautiful idealism or something, I just remember saying like a life that sounds like a good life to me is a life where you find a city and you find a people and you try to die there with them. You know, like you spend 30 or 40 years in one place and you just do good work for a long time. And then you die preaching and they bury you in the backyard at 95 years old or something, you know, like that, right. That sounded awesome to me. And I always said that. Yeah. Live in the dream. And I always said that to them, you know, like I'm going to be here for 30 years and we got all this work. And we walked through some stuff that it just made it really clear in 2016 and 2017 that like it wouldn't be right to stay. Like it was time to move on. And in that way that you know that you're hitting the expiration date on something, we knew that we were hitting it. And so we discerned the Lord's work in that and lots of people around us like blessing that. And so all that was great. It was beautiful. But moving here to Colorado Springs in the summer of 2017, I thought, having worked through the whole process of like getting the decision to leave, that was the hard thing to do. And that was a quarter of it, maybe. Like the real grieving process, the real difficulty came afterwards. And I didn't have language for it then, but looking back on it, I've come to see that in some ways, like moving from Denver to the Springs, and that switch and kind of the ministry assignment for me, it was honestly like being put in a witness protection program. You know, it was like, here's your new job. Here are your new friends. Here's your new community. Here's your new house. Here's your new car. Yeah. Here's your new life. And all that stuff that you used to be, that guy that you used to be, that thing that you represented in the other life. Yeah. Not really so much with that anymore. Here's your new thing. And it was so disorienting for me. And so the grieving process had only really just begun in the fall of 2017. And a friend of mine I can't even remember how it happened, but he just said, you know, you need to read the Desert Fathers and Mothers. And I said, well, why is that? And I knew about them because I'd read Henry Nouwen, The Way of the Heart. So I know the history and I'd interacted with them a little bit, but he said, you need to read them. And I said, why? And he said, because the thing that you are walking through that you did not choose, they chose. Like they chose the abandonment of their reputation. They chose the abandonment of institution. They chose the abandonment of what power they had. And they found God in it. They found God in the desert. They found God in the desolation. They found God in the wilderness. And so I picked up, I ordered Benedict Award's alphabetical collection of the sayings of the Desert Fathers and Mothers, and honestly started reading it religiously. Like I'd finish up my scripture reading and prayer. And then the first thing I would read is I would sit in the sayings of the Desert Fathers and Mothers. And honestly, it hit me at the right time and their words were the right words for me. Like the way I talk about it in the book is they became like cartographers of the holy for me. Mm-hmm. Like they lit up this landscape that I was not understanding. They were helping me make sense of where God was in a space where it felt like everything had fallen apart. So, you know, that honestly, that like grieving and rebuilding process took a few years, you know, just sitting with them and listening to them and learning to not just be able to tolerate the darkness, but to love the darkness because I was meeting God in it and I was becoming somebody different. And then the longer I sat with them, the more I just thought, actually, they have a word to speak to the whole church here. You know, like we're living in a desolate time. I think it was Thomas Merton who said, like, you don't feel like, you know, it used to be that people fled hundreds of miles to go out into the desert to try to find God. Now he said the desert is everywhere. Like our society is a wasteland. And so it's right at our doorstep and we don't need to run away to find the wilderness. It's there. And God is also there in it. And so Streams it's different than All Flame. You know, All Flame is kind of like a, where is God in the suffering? But Streams is more like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're living in a time of great madness and chaos and inhumanity. And the Desert Fathers and Mothers can help us reclaim the radical way of Jesus. Like in this wilderness, they can give us language to see where God is and to live more humanly in an inhuman age. So this to me, in a lot of ways, is like a mini manifesto to the church to help her reclaim who she is. Yeah. So, yeah.
And now a word from a sponsor.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's get back into our conversation. What say a bit about you know, for the say a bit more about our culture sort of being a wasteland, sort of the wilderness is everywhere, and maybe some of the ways, you know, if this book is about helping the church reclaim who she is, what are some of the ways, you know, you talk a little bit about consumer society, consumer church, that kind of a thing. What are some of the ways that that the church do you think has been compromised by the wasteland that's all around us?
Well, I mean, I think the obvious ways are certainly the consumerism of the church, you know, that we see the church as a thing that dispenses spiritual goods and services and exists to serve me. And I think that that's the fundamentally American way of looking at the church. And I think that we've been co-opted by that. And I think that kills our humanity for sure. And right along with that is the individualism of our culture, which has been rampant. You know, I mean, it's, I think it's written into the fabric of being an American. It's just part of it. But I think that we're in the full flowering of it now, you know? So those are the obvious ways. But I think, guys, the way, you know, what I'm most concerned about these days, what I'm praying about, and what somehow finds its way into most messages that I preach, is there is a level of anger and vitriol in our culture right now. I mean, this like, everybody is trying to take America back from somebody that they think is trying to take America from them. And we've lost kind of a common vision of the good together, if we ever really had it, but we certainly don't have it anymore. And there's this vacuum now that's created that's just getting filled by the loudest voices, the angriest voices, many of them recruiting religion and Christianity into that, which I think is co-opting our discipleship in huge ways. Like, I think that the ends are starting to justify the means for people. And I just hear more Christians tolerating bad behavior in the name of a vision of America that they think, you know, is God's vision of America. I'm just hearing that. I'm seeing it all the time. And it's really distressing to me. And I think sometimes you need voices that kind of shake you awake. They shake you out of your stupor. And I think about the great statement of Dallas Willard, where he says that familiarity winds up breeding unfamiliarity, which leads to contempt. And I think part of the problem with us in the church is that Jesus is he's just part of the furniture of our experience that we think we've seen him, but we really haven't, you know, we're missing him. And so every once in a while you need voices that come along that, they reintroduce you to Jesus. So Streams to me is actually not really about the Desert Fathers and Mothers. It's about the way in which the Desert Fathers and Mothers in a similar time, you know, they're looking around at the Roman Empire, which had recently been Christianized by Constantine. And the Roman Empire also at that time is starting to crumble kind of at the edges. It was a time of great social fragmentation and fear. So what do? Like, they flee to the wilderness, not with their middle fingers raised to the empire, but they were trying to find God and they were trying to reconnect with the radical way of Jesus. And David Bentley Hart argues that they re-evangelized Christianity because of that. They got back to Jesus. And that to me is what this thing is about. It's about like, hey, can we talk? Let's have a conversation with these people for a second so that we can see Jesus with clear eyes, so that we can see our moment with clear eyes and live more faithfully in it. So,
you know, Andrew, I think when people, I don't know, think about the church mothers and fathers, they think about like hermits living alone and doing their spiritual practices. But the second part of your book is about how we're called to community, you know, how we're saved into community, we're restored through community. And what's the relationship with the desert fathers and mothers to community? How does that play out for us today?
It's such a great question. Cause I when I first started reading them, and that was my impression, that these were all people that they were essentially solitaries. They lived by themselves. And when you start reading the literature, what you see is that only there were two kinds of monks that lived by themselves. And one were like, they were the anchoritic, you know, the anchorite monks. And those were folks that had like lived in community long enough and lived under a rule and discipline and connected to the church enough that they had the spiritual maturity to be able to go off and have long stretches of time where they were essentially by themselves. But even when they did that, they stayed connected to community. They were generally under a superior. They would still show up for worship, so they were still connected. The group of people that were very much looked down upon by folks like John Cassian and others were, they called them the Sarabites. And the Sarabites were people that basically said, like, not only do I not need society, but I don't need the church. Like, I'm going to go find God for myself, and the church is just so oppressive, and everybody's so oppressive, and I'm just going to commune with the divine in some cave out there. And those people, like, went crazy. In fact, the Cambridge historian Owen Chadwick says that total isolation was found to lead to delusions and madness, and oftentimes even to death. Like, they lost their humanity. So what's fascinating to me about the Desert Fathers and Mothers is that they're constantly saying, like, we need each other. We need each other. Mm-hmm. Like, we need the encouragement of brothers and sisters. There's an enrichment that we find with each other. We need superiors over us. So we basically need brothers and sisters who are further along in the path to help us understand what the way of righteousness looks like. And we also need to be part of the worshiping rhythm of a community. So, like, these folks were gathering on Saturdays and Sundays for worship like we do. And somehow that anchored them in the divine, and it anchored them in their quest for holiness. So I don't know if that exactly answers the question, but I think what's astounding to them about them, to me, is that it's the quality of relationship that they're fighting for that I think is a real word for our time. Because I think that we all kind of believe, yeah, I'm supposed to be involved in church, and of course I need good friends and all of that. But these folks were doing something different. Like, they were trying, like Paul has a statement in Philippians 1, where he says, I pray that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may discern what is best and may be pure and blameless until the day of Christ Jesus. These folks were trying to recapture, how does God happen between us? Like, they were trying to relearn the essence of humanity, the essence of relationship. What does forgiveness look like? What does it look like to speak the truth in love? What does it look like to bite your tongue? What does it look like to share your possessions? And as they're living this way, it becomes this, like, new kind of model for how we're just supposed to live generally. So, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but what we know as the monastic movement grows up out of the desert tradition. Like, folks went and sat at the feet of these desert fathers and mothers, and they went, jeez, like, you guys are doing this differently than we're all doing it. Teach us this. And they compiled their wisdom together and then started founding monasteries, which later influenced the broader church. Again, they were recapturing the way that Jesus calls us to live in radical fellowship with one another. So I think that they call us, you know, like, the title of Rowan Williams' great book on the Desert Fathers and Mothers is Where God Happens. And what that is for him is, it's a little catchphrase for talking about relationships, that relationships are the place where God happens. And I think what these guys and gals do is they give us fresh eyes to see how and where God happens between us. They attune us to the presence of the divine in our midst. And honestly, you know, I think about, sorry, I'm just kind of rambling here, but I think about, you know, the lessons that we all learned from Stanley Hauerwas years ago, where he says that the church doesn't, like, engage in politics. The church is a politic. It's the, like, the church's way of being in the world is the most profound thing that it says to the world. And so if we can start just recapturing even just how we interact with one another, how we love, how we leverage our possessions and steward our words with each other, that'll do more than any political movement, political statement, or political leader can ever do for us. Like, it's about being faithful to Jesus.
I have two questions now. So my first question is, I wanted to maybe take an entire podcast to unpack. You mentioned an epistemological crisis and how the fathers and mothers helped you through that. But it strikes me that what you just named, one of the things that has helped me reform my epistemology, which is this relational knowing. I mean, that's what Paul's talking about there in Philippians 1:9. He's talking about there's a reflexive relational knowing that is that's very different from a, like, more crass, rigid, Platonic, Aristotelian way of knowing. Could you maybe unpack that a little more? Because I think a lot of people think they're having a faith crisis, Andrew.
Yeah.
And what they're actually having is an epistemological crisis.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. One thing that they will, I think that relationships are an art form. And I think that being in relationships takes a measure of savvy that is not reducible to like, here are the rules and here's the prescription for making it happen. And one of the things that will astonish you when you start reading the Desert Fathers and Mothers is that they, like, a word that's an important word for them is discernment. And so discernment is like, what is happening right in front of me right now? And what does that demand of me? Like, how do I need to shape my own presence and my own being in light of the needs of this person in front of me? And so what that means then is that I can't just be rigid in the way, well, okay, this is how I respond to this situation. No, you don't have that. What you're trying to enter into is the fluidity of the spirit. So like one great story from the desert is one of the great desert fathers had three folks come to visit him, and they all had different requests for them, but one of them had a bad reputation. And so the first person makes their request and the desert father says, no, I can't fulfill that request for you. And the second person makes a request and he goes, I can't do that for you. And the third person, who has the bad reputation, makes the request, and the desert father goes, oh, I'd be happy to do that for you. And the first two get mad at him, you know, come back around and like, why? You like, we're like the good guys in our community here. And we asked you to do the same. Why don't you do the same for us? And he goes, don't you understand? If I'd said no to him, he would have had a broken heart and we would have lost our contact with him. So I had to go out of my way to do this thing for him in order to keep him near. And I get goosebumps even sharing that, because I think that to me is like the way of Jesus. You know, it's like he didn't just see crowds, like he saw individuals, he saw people, and he saw their need. And that's what these folks are trying to like help us recover. I've been doing some reading lately in attachment theory and just thinking, thinking through that and the way that like disrupts our relationships. And one of the, you guys know this, one of the big words in attachment theory is attunement. Like attunement is part, like attachment really in some ways almost just boils down to that. It's the capacity to be within yourself and fully present with another person and dialed into what their needs are and their being is. And then somehow there is this fluidity, there's this dance where our minds and our hearts and even our bodies will synchronize with each other. 1700 years ago, there was a group of people that they were doing that. They're going, hey, it's not just about the rule book, and it's not just about being rigid about our prescriptions for holiness. It's about like, what's the spirit doing in this person? And how do I say yes to that?
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, our 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn how to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life that God shares with us. It is a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying out some new practices. In the Gravity Formation course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us toward holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people from all over the world in this formation framework, and it's helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives and learn to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
Let's get back to the show. You mentioned what the Spirit's doing. I mean, you're a Tulsa boy, right? Born and raised?
Yeah. Born and raised in Wisconsin in a charismatic church, but I went to Oral Roberts University. So
that's right. Okay,
I can claim that. Yeah, Tulsa's on the resume.
Tulsa in his heart.
You took your cheesehead hat to Oral Roberts University.
Oh, Bucky. That's right. No, Bucky. Bucky
no.
the Badger. But,
no.
Bucky Badger and the cheesehead. They both went with. Yeah.
I see you talking about the Packers a lot. So you go to Tulsa, Oral Roberts, and then you come to Trinity, right? So you have this charismatic stream, and then you go to Trinity, which is really the Bible, right? Evangelical kind of Bible-centered stream. And I think there's a popular notion that Azusa Street and Tulsa, they sort of have the market cornered on what it means to be charismatic.
Right.
But can you, maybe there could be this surface level tale that you're kind of jumping around and now you've eschewed what it means to be charismatic by plunging into the Desert Fathers and Mothers. But could you maybe talk about how the Desert Fathers and Mothers have parented you to be a more faithful charismatic?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll just say this, just a broad comment and then a specific remark about that. It's astonishing to me when I read church history how all of the things that were, I thought were the specific domain kind of the charismatic world have lived everywhere. You just see them across the ages, like in the City of God, Augustine, as he devotes a really long section at the end, giving proof to the resurrection by all of these miraculous healings that he has meticulously recorded. And they tend to happen in church or around sacred shrines and all of that. And they're really, really great stories. So it's, you know, it's there. I think based on some things that Augustine said, that he spoke in tongues, St. Teresa of Avila, she makes some remarks in, I can't remember which book it is, but it makes me go, oh, I think she's, you know, I think she spoke in tongues too. So it's like everywhere. So that's given me, like, it's made me as a charismatic. I think my journey has just reassured me that I'm not strange, that it's all there. The Desert Fathers and Mothers, certainly. And I'll just say, to answer your question, I'll say two things. I think the thing that I maybe appreciated the most about my charismatic heritage and that I think I live with on a daily basis is, like, folks have asked me over the years, like, what do you think it means to be charismatic? And I'll say, well, I think that the core charismatic intuition is that God is right here and he is right now. And we can have an interactive relationship with this God and anything can happen. And to quote Oral Roberts, something good is about to happen to you. Like, God is seeking our good. God is seeking our good in all things. And when we open our hearts to him, we're open to the goodness of God breaking in. Yeah. And I was surrounded as a child. I talk about this a bit in the book, but I was surrounded by so many people who the cornerstone of that life of awareness of God was their deep life of prayer. They were mystics, though we never use that language. They were mystics. My mom up early in the morning, poring over the scriptures and praying for her family and for her kids and for her friends. And then she would go into her day with wisdom on her lips and her eyes open to the wonders of God and ready to do whatever she could for the good of others. And that's how these folks lived. Like, they lived, the cornerstone of their life was prayer. They prayed without ceasing and prayed without ceasing. They were like, you know, Brother Lawrence, the practice of the presence of God. And it opened their eyes to the wonders of God. They were able to enter into that relational space, that spirit space with one another, because they'd anchored themselves in God's presence first. So I think that's probably the first thing. Like, they were, I said this in the book, but what struck me when I read them for the first time was not how remote they were, but how familiar they felt to me. I went, oh my gosh, like, I know people just like this, you know, people who, like, the world doesn't take any notice of, but they live deep in the presence of God and they're beautiful people, benefit to society, to the church. So that's the first thing. The second thing, though, is I think that there's this profound rebuke to a lot of the charismatic movement inside the Desert Fathers and Mothers. So much of the charismatic movement as I knew it, what frustrated me and almost made me leave it altogether, was the way in which it so easily got hijacked by pride and vanity and reputation building and money and power and all of that. And so you'd have a person who had a real legitimate gift for, you know, miracles or healings or whatever, but then all of a sudden you've built this ministry around it and there's a persona and now it's like this thing where the attention is no longer on the profound work of the Spirit or the healing power of Jesus, but the attention is on this person who is flying around the world in a private jet and all that. All that stuff is so obnoxious to me. And what's fascinating to me about these guys is that there are miracles, like, miracles happen. And I'll share a story about one in just a second here, but, like, profound miracles happen. But because they were so devoted to the idea of holiness, they would never let any of that other junk, like, accrue around it. Like, you couldn't, like, they were just totally averse to the idea of, like, building your brand through your spiritual gifts. So, like, this is one of my favorite stories from the desert is this. There was this guy by the name of Abba Longinus, and Longinus had gifts of healing, and he was known throughout the region as a healer. And there was a woman in a neighboring town who had breast cancer. And, you know, back in those days, that's basically a death sentence. And so she's panicked and she talks to her townspeople and they go, well, you need to go over to this other town because there's this guy over there, Longinus, and he has gifts of healing. If you go see him, the odds are pretty good. You're going to get healed. She goes, okay. So she gets up and she starts heading towards the town. And Longinus is at the edge of town working in one of the fields, but she doesn't know it's him. And she bumps into him on the way into the town. And he goes, who are you looking for? And she goes, well, I'm looking for this guy, Abba Longinus. And he goes, what are you looking for him for? And she goes, well, I heard that he can heal, you know, that he's got gifts. And he goes, no, you don't want to talk to that guy. He's a charlatan. He's an idiot. He's a fool. He's just a big moron. And so now what's wrong with you? And she explains what's wrong. And he goes, get over here. And he makes the sign of the cross, you know. over the afflicted area. And he goes, now get on out of here. She turns around and she goes home and she's healed. And she, you know, and they go, well, what happened? She tells the whole story and they go, that was him. That was Longinus. Like you. So it's a funny story, but it's also a sharp rebuke. Because here is this guy who is like, he has made it his life's mission to deconstruct his growing reputation. And just thereby the holiness of his life expands, like it grows. So you can seek humility and the gifts of the Spirit at the same time. You can seek the renunciation of your brand and be a healer at the same time. And not just at the same time, but I actually think that these folks show us that to the extent to which you run away from your reputation and your brand and your all that stuff, that the holiness, presence, the power of God, it grows in you. So I read these guys as a charismatic, and it actually helps me. I go, this is actually a different and better, more humane, holier vision of being a charismatic than I saw in the early years of my life.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Andrew, we talked about the misconception of being a hermit, but we also, let's talk about, like, there's this picture, this idea that the church mothers and fathers are mainly concerned with their purity and their salvation, almost like they're spiritually self-indulgent. But the last section of your book talks about how they went into the desert for the world. And so what's the connection between these practices and practical mission and justice in the world?
Well, there were some of them that didn't understand this, but in the main, it's fair to say that what they understood was that people are the priority, because people, again, to use Rowan Williams' phrase, people are the place where God happens. And so even though they were devoted to the quest for personal holiness and they were devoted to their rule of life, you know, their structures and their commitments and all of that, they also, almost to a person, they would say, but when the demand of the neighbor, the demand of a brother or sister comes into your life, you suspend what you're doing for the sake of them. So if you're in the middle of a long fast and your next door neighbor who doesn't know Jesus invites you to sit down and eat meat and drink wine, you eat the meat and you drink the wine in the name of Jesus, trusting that the presence of God is going to show up there and they're going to be swept up into the kingdom. And when all of that's over, you do whatever you need to do to get back into your little rule of life and pursue holiness and reattain your discipline. But because the demand of the moment is the person, you jump in on that. So I do think it's a profound misconception that these folks were, I like your phrase there, Christy, that they were spiritually self-indulgent. Some of them very much were, but in the main, they weren't. In the main, they were so oriented to other people that when the demand came up, they jumped right into it. And they teach us that, I think. Again, it's that attunement. It's responsiveness to what's going on around you. That we don't have the luxury. Like, it's spiritually illegitimate to seek God in some kind of isolation that takes no account for the need of others around us and the need of broader society. So I do think that they teach us that for sure. Willing to suspend their personal quest for what was happening in front of them.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, we alluded to this earlier as well, but, you know, deconstruction, a lot of, you know, evangelical Christians kind of consider themselves to be in some kind of process of deconstruction. You know, Matt said earlier that you know, that may be an epistemological crisis. It may be just like a new paradigm crisis, a way of seeing the world. But what would you say, you know, is here in this book that would be encouraging or helpful to those who are maybe reevaluating the framework they grew up with for faith?
I think I think that there are many species of deconstruction and everybody's journey is unique. But one of the things that I do think about our moment is that I wonder if deconstruction, especially kind of in the evangelical world, isn't the going to seed of a very cerebral approach to the faith, where we don't know how to live the faith bodily. And so when there are shifts and changes in our minds, in our thinking, we panic because we've so located faith in the realm of the mind. And what the desert tradition teaches us, again, is that faith, I mean, there's very little doctrine in the desert fathers and mothers. You're not getting that. Now, they're teaching you doctrine by way of how they model holiness, But there's no, like, you're not going to get any sayings of them where they're sitting down and unpacking the two natures of Christ or the Trinity or, you know, the, right. you know, yeah. theology of the sacrament. They're just not doing that. What they are doing is they're orienting you to the reality of God in community and the reality of God as God comes to us in the life of personal prayer. So sometimes I think that with deconstruction, what we have is because we don't know how to live the faith bodily, when stuff starts to spin up here, we feel like we're losing our faith. When in reality, all that's happening is that we're having a shift of the shift of our brain cells, or it's a natural process that you're going through mm-hmm. where some structure of faith that served you well at a certain point in your life is starting to fall to pieces. Mm-hmm. And what's coming on the heels of that is going to be a broader understanding of God and what it means to be human. And you just have to hold on through it. But the only way that you can make it is if you're in community. So, you know, the church that we pastored in Denver, I've talked to so many people over the years that have been walking through deconstruction. And one of the things I used to say, I remember saying to this, some of the folks who were, you know, deconstructing at our church in Denver, is they'd lay out something, you know, I was born and raised Baptist. And then I read a book by Richard Rohr and it, you know, it got me spinning in this wild direction. And now I'm questioning everything or whatever. And I just listened to them. And they go, and now mm-hmm. I'm just not sure if I believe in any of this stuff anymore. And I'd go, that is so fascinating. And I'm so glad that you shared that with me. I guess what I'd like to ask you is, are you still bringing the mashed potatoes to house church on Thursday night?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right, and that right. was like pastorally, yeah. like that was my invitation to them to like, sweet mm-hmm. man, like, great. Like, let's let that process, that mental process that's happening. Mm-hmm. Let's just go ahead and let that happen. And why don't you retain some objectivity for that for a second while you fulfill mm-hmm. your obligations in the community and enjoy the way that God's beauty comes to us in the holiness of gathering together in community. Somehow it's being mm-hmm. in community, it's anchoring for all of those shifts and changes. Yeah. And I think what's alarming yeah. to me is how many people go, well, I'm walking through this season of deconstruction, so I break myself off from the church. And what I'll give you is that there are a lot of churches that are really bad churches to have a deconstructing experience in.
Right.
They're just not conducive to it.
That's the message people get.
Yes.
You have to leave.
Yeah. Right, because the pastors are preaching messages against deconstruction and they've blacklisted mm-hmm. all of these people that you shouldn't be reading. And then it just feels like I can't ask questions. I need to go over here and just, you know, sit on the back porch with my best friend smoking cigars and calling it church or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that we've got to do a better job as pastors creating, curating spaces where when people come to us and they say it's all falling apart, we just are not panicked by that, you know? And yes. Jesus wasn't panicked by it. I mean, think about like the Mount of Ascension in Matthew 28, you know, there are all these people gathered around Jesus as he's getting ready and he gives the Great Commission, you know? Mm-hmm. Go, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, all that stuff. And the scripture says that when they saw him and they listened to those words, they worshiped him and some of them doubted. Mm-hmm. And he still gives the Great Commission to them.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, that's like, I think that's the posture that I'm advocating for ministry yeah. leaders, is to like, yeah. let people go through what they're going through. Just keep calling them into the sacred task and take their mm-hmm. questions and their doubts seriously, but don't make them ultimate, because that's not the final yeah. truth about them. What's going on, the movements of our, mm-hmm. you know, prefrontal cortex, it's not the final truth about us. It's one part yeah. of it, you know? And so, but then to people that are walking through deconstruction, I would just say, God is the great and final truth, and mm. the triune God is the great and final truth. And there's nothing true that you can experience that is outside of him. So run yeah. at all the questions and pursue yeah. them as passionately as you possibly can, and do it with people that you trust. Find a pastor that will be willing to sit down with you and share the things and read books with you, and find a group of friends, you know, and listen to great podcasts where they're honest about this stuff. You could listen mm. to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, you know?
For example?
For example, you know?
Just to pick a random example?
That's right. But yeah. there's no need to cut bait.
Yeah.
The only yeah. reason we would need to cut bait is, I think, if we thought that it's all about what's going on here. And I think it's not. Mm. I think that these folks remind us that faith is much larger than that.
Yeah.
It's about our bodies.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a super good word for us as pastors and leaders. Felt very encouraging as somebody who has been through some of those seasons myself of the rearranging of mm-hmm. paradigms and mental furniture. It's encouraging. Mm-hmm. Andrew, I really appreciate you spending some time with us on the podcast today. Listeners, the new book is called Streams in the Wasteland, Finding Spiritual Renewal with the Desert Fathers and Mothers. Andrew, how can people find you online if they want to reach out or ask a question or touch base about something?
AndrewArndt.com. I put some stuff there, and Twitter and Instagram is at TheAndrewArndt, and Facebook is just TheAndrewArndt, so just reach out to me there.
Okay. Yeah. And Arndt is
A-R-N-D-T. R-N-D-T. It's kind of a train D-T. Wreck of consonants. Yeah.
Yeah, so don't many get consonants. Up there. Yeah. So many consonants. Yeah.
Hey, before we leave.
Thanks again, Andrew.
Wait, before we leave, Christine. I've got a suggestion.
I remember this, yeah.
Because before we hit record,
this is the next book suggestion.
Andrew,
right?
I know we're talking about your second book, but I got an idea for your third book already. And so here's my idea.
Let's do this.
Here it is.
Okay. It's a kid's book. It's a kid's book. And the book is called My Friends in the Sandbox, Stories of Desert Fathers and Mothers.
What?
I think kids need to hear these stories.
That is a great idea. Oh, my God.
Friends
in the
Sandbox.
Kids need to hear these stories. And you are a storyteller. And I feel like you can, write it in a kid way and have some fun art, and it would be awesome. There's not stuff out there.
Wow. So,
anyway, that's my suggestion.
Okay, I'll do it if you'll help me with it, Christy.
Okay, there we go. That's a deal.
All right, it's a deal. Wow, perfect. Thanks for the suggestion. Right. That's awesome.
Well, we'll have you back on to talk about that one and read some stories of the desert fathers and mothers.
All right. Can't wait.
All right.
Appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you, Andrew.
Peace. Talk to you soon.
Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful or enjoyable, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And you can join our Gravity community online for free at gravityleadership.com/join.
You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as our email most Fridays with curated links to articles we find interesting and helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the show. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Recording button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.